Yesterday, in our session, we talked about Central America. I had with me, but perhaps neglected to show and explain, a brochure that is available and speaks to especially the situation in Guatemala. And it's called From Guatemala, an Epistle to the Believing Communities in the United States. And this is a greeting in the form of an epistle, in the form of a letter, using the biblical model, signed by six church persons from the United States, some of them from the National Council of Churches, one of them the General Secretary of the Lutheran World Ministries, and three men and three women who visited Guatemala and firsthand experienced the drama, the tragedy, and the reality of Christian life in Guatemala. And they give us a report of this. In this, it's available in quantities. I can loan you this afterwards if you'd like to write for your copy. The address is on the back page. And I think if you want quantities, you might have to pay so much a copy. Otherwise, I'm sure it's free. I saw a copy of this over on the bulletin board in the dining hall, but it was just one copy. Somebody posted it, but it's not available here that I'm aware of. I was not aware of it myself when I ordered the materials for the bookstore, and so I don't think the bookstore has that. The bookstore has this book, The Cry of My People, written by Esther and Mortimer Arias, A-R-I-A-S, Latin Americans, Christians. Mortimer Arias is a Methodist bishop. His wife, co-author, subtitle, Out of Captivity in Latin America. And I think you'll find this book published by Friendship Press in 1980 to be valuable in your understanding of Latin America. Just because I want to do this once, I'm going to do it today, give a plug for a publication that comes from our own office, the Office of the Division for World Mission and Interchurch Cooperation of the ALC, World Mission Review. This is an annual that comes out, has at least for the last 4 years, and you can order it from Augsburg Publishing House, I think for $2.50. There's also a prayer calendar that can be also ordered. It might be in the bookstore. I haven't verified if it is in the bookstore. You did? Okay, very good. This is a review of many of the places in the world where the American Lutheran Church is active through this Division for World Mission, but also contains significant articles that speak to the mission of the church generally and not necessarily to the work that the American Lutheran Church is doing. So I can recommend that to you. The prayer calendar mentions all the missionaries of the ALC, but it is... you're right. Every missionary and their address is listed in the back of this book. But there is, separately from this, a prayer calendar that suggests for each day of the year not only some prayer concerns, but also names of missionaries and their pictures. But this volume does not have pictures, only names and addresses. Today, I promise to speak about Lutherans of Latin America around the theme Unity and Mission. We've talked about the reality of Latin America in three preceding sessions. And we haven't had a chance to entertain questions about some of the work that the Lutheran Church is doing that is related to the churches in this country. Perhaps some of you are even unaware of the extent of the witness of the Lutherans in Latin America, because we hear that Latin America is a Roman Catholic continent. I said Tuesday night in Brazil is the largest Roman Catholic country in the world with 101 million Catholics. There is no nation in the world with that many Roman Catholics. We know from other countries, Mexico and Colombia, of the strong Roman Catholic influence in the culture and even in the politics. And so it might be surprising to some to know that there are well over a million Lutherans in Latin America. Most of these are in Brazil. Possibly 900,000, and the rest of them scattered around from north to south. I'm just going to go briefly around the continent and show you and tell you where Lutherans are located and how they arrived there. I feel that this is a necessary first step. And we certainly want to have room for questions today more than any other day. And if there are questions that have arisen in the preceding lectures that we didn't have time to get to, please feel free to bring them up. But let's not cut our topic short either. Let's be sure that we cover it. I think the Lutherans in Latin America are about as diverse in their origins as any place in the world. Much like the United States, the Lutherans in Brazil came to the New World, to the Americas, through the immigrants from Europe who already called themselves Lutherans, who already knew the Lutheran doctrines and established very soon, immediately upon their arrival in the New World, congregations, brought their pastors with them, their teachers, and even though it was a little bit difficult because the laws of the land did not facilitate establishing Protestant groupings, they grew and remained strong from the very beginning. The first Lutherans in Brazil of any significance were in 1824. There were already Lutherans in the United States of America by that time, but not very many. The wave of immigration that brought many Lutherans to this country occurred later. These Lutherans were from Germany, and so today the great majority of Lutherans in Brazil can trace their ancestry back to German Lutherans who earlier or later immigrated from Europe. And not only Germans, but also some Scandinavians. Others from, I guess the rest of them are all Europeans in any case. Some of the Hungarians or Latvians and Estonians are also represented in Brazil. In addition to the history of Lutheranism in Brazil, in addition to the German influence, there has been activity by missionaries from North America, some of them from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and some of them from what is today the American Lutheran Church. This, to make a long story short, has resulted in two major churches, one of them a sister church now of the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America, although not in any way dependent on these two churches, and which does not have its origins in any way from these churches. The other church associated with the Missouri Synod, that is the smaller of the two churches, I think the Missouri Synod Church being only about 20% as large as the other, so that maybe 750,000 in the one and 175,000 in the other. The work, a question. Go ahead. Yeah. I maybe misled you to think that there was a close relationship between this church, the Evangelical Church of the Lutheran Confession in Brazil, and the LCA. That is a kind of a beginning relationship. But with the ALC, the relationship is close. We have about 14 ALC pastors who work within that church. This began in the late 50s when one of the predecessor bodies of the ALC sent pastors to Brazil without asking any Lutherans there if they were needed, simply sent them there to start new mission work. Well, it was soon discovered that was a mistake, that, you know, it isn't only a question of courtesy when you're going to be doing mission work to be in touch with other groups, Christian groups, even other Lutheran groups in the country where you plan to do mission. But it strategically was, it was just a poor idea to think that apart from the Lutheran church of that area, which was itself quite numerous and quite strong, that something could be established which would then not fracture the presence and the Lutheran witness there. So within a few short years, a marriage of this new mission effort and the existing Lutheran church was achieved, fortunately, in short order, and so that the missionaries who were there were then incorporated into the mission strategies and policies of the Lutherans who were already there. I think we could understand if the Germans all of a sudden decided the ALC and the LCA and the LCMS aren't doing their job in the U.S., let's send some missionaries over there and show them really how to do mission and how to be faithful witness to Christ, and we won't have anything to do with them, we're going to start a new church, you know. How would we react to that? Would we consider that an expression of brotherly and Christian sisterly love to join forces in the cause of Christ? No, that would be a fracturing of our witness here in North America, and we would oppose it. Well, that was the case in Brazil. In other parts of Latin America, missionary activity from the U.S. took place in Argentina, in Colombia, in Venezuela, in Bolivia. Sometimes in the name of one of the churches in North America, whether it was the former Evangelical Lutheran Church or the former United Evangelical Lutheran Church, I mean the United Lutheran Church of America, the ULCA, as was the case in Argentina. Other times it was an independent group like the World Mission Prayer League, headquartered in Minneapolis, also a Lutheran agency, a mission agency, as was the case in Bolivia. Some of these used as a rationale for going there in the first place, well, these other Lutheran groups, they are European and they aren't reaching out to the population. They aren't reaching out to the nationals. They are more concerned about preserving their own heritage and their own language and their own people, but they haven't yet discovered, you know, their call to reach out to the whole of the population. Well, this was true in some cases. This was very true in some cases. The Brazilians are the first to admit that for many decades they did not consider themselves a Brazilian church. They considered themselves to be kind of outposts of the German Lutheran Church in the diaspora. And they were preaching and ministering to their own kind in their own language, and and only kind of reluctantly did they start to use the Portuguese language in the church, mostly when their young people insisted that the church services should be held, confirmation classes and the like, in the national language. Well, this was many years ago, and today not only in Brazil but most everywhere, with a few exceptions yet, it is true that Lutherans have discovered that they are no longer Europeans, even though they might still use the language of their forefathers occasionally out of nostalgia or whatever, but in essence they have discovered their roots are where they live. And the quicker they become a part of that society and a part of that reality, the sooner they will be able to grow and to be faithful to the call of God to be a witness and to be a leaven and a salt of the earth and to carry on Christ's mission. So it's just not true. We cannot speak of a German church in Brazil. It doesn't exist. There are some German pastors in Brazil, but there are American pastors and there are some Norwegian pastors. Why? Because the growth of the church in Brazil exceeded, even though it was not a fantastic growth rate, it was a more natural growth rate, exceeded the availability of pastors. And so invitations were extended and continue to be extended to Lutherans in these three countries mainly, Germany, Norway, and the United States, to assist the Brazilian church in maintaining a complete witness with congregations staffed by pastors. That's not the only reason for having those foreigners there. They also believe that it is healthy for the body of Christ to have persons from other cultures who have other experiences of the Christian faith to come and be a witness to them and to make their contribution. And combined with the need for pastors, we now have a situation where of the 375 pastors in the Evangelical Church of the Lutheran Confession in Brazil, less than 50 are from the outside. When 15, 20 years ago, it was almost the opposite. The seminary that serves that church in Brazil has been growing at a fantastic rate in the last 5 to 6 years. There are now over 200 students at that seminary. When I went there in 1971, I don't think they had more than 80. Many of those students are women. Women are being ordained into the ministry in this church in Brazil and are being accepted in the congregations. And it's quite exciting place to visit simply because the church is finding among its own young people the numbers they need to soon to be at the work of Christ in Brazil. I don't think that will create a problem with the oversupply of pastors because as the church becomes Brazilian in its outlook, it also is going to discover new avenues and new opportunities for ministry in the Amazon region, for instance, where an area so great that now the only pastoral ministry is that of a circuit rider where the pastor comes around once a year or once every 6 months. So there's a lot of room for expansion. Let me go to your question.
You answered my question.
Okay. Well, that's what I like to do. Although I hope you can ask some questions that won't be so easy to answer because we want to face the difficult ones too. Let me just take a couple other areas in Latin America to show you the difference. Because, for instance, in Mexico there are a number of Lutheran groups. And unlike Brazil, where there seems to have been a merger of different kinds of synods and different groups, in Mexico it has been the opposite, and we have maybe even over half a dozen small Lutheran groups struggling in Mexico to be Lutheran, and none of the groups really have more than a few hundred members. And they don't seem to find the unity within their theological diversity to be able to have one church. Now, these are congregations, many of them, with no European background whatsoever. Some of them came in contact with the Lutheran faith on this side of the border, down in Texas. Some of them had previously been in other Protestant churches. There was a seminary for over 15 years in Mexico City called Augsburg Lutheran Seminary. It served not only the Mexican churches but also other areas of northern Latin America like Venezuela, Colombia, Central America. For lack of students, it had to close in June of this year. A number of students went through the seminary, but at the last class had four and two professors, and it was just economically impossible to continue because there was no promise of any other students. These churches in Mexico, of course, face very, very difficult circumstances in their growth. They find interest for another church
to be almost non-existent, because almost every Protestant church you can think of is active in Mexico. And most of the people who are around them in their immediate community are members of the Roman Catholic Church. And there is, at least in certain parts of Latin America, maybe less so in Mexico, there is a certain reform movement in the Roman Catholic Church which leaves you shaking your head and wondering, well, do we have any business trying to convert these people? When the parish in Tres de Mayo, Rio Grande do Sul, where I was a pastor, the Roman Catholic parish organized Bible studies in the whole parish, in the homes of the people. That was one of the things Martin Luther complained about in the Roman Catholic Church, that the Bible wasn't in the hands of the laypersons. Well, there it is. And in other areas as well. And so I think the rationale for the Lutherans to be active in Latin America cannot be today to convert a pagan continent. It's a false understanding of Christ's mission. There is a Lutheran witness to be made in Latin America. I believe that a contribution to the reform movement within Roman Catholicism is something where even the Lutheran witness is welcomed by the Catholics. They seem to find within the Lutheran understanding of the church and the sacraments, they seem to find enough that pleases them so that they prefer in their contact with other Christians to work with Lutherans as opposed to some other, the Pentecostal groups, for instance. We simply are closer to them in many, many ways, and they are, even though it might say a little slower to catch on the ecumenical dimension of the Vatican Council, Vatican II, is being felt today in Latin America. In a country like Colombia, we have another situation where some mission activity from one of the North American churches has brought forth a number of 10 or 12 congregations, Spanish-speaking, without any connection with the European roots, and on the other hand, still two congregations of German origin, which are not integrated into that other group, so that we have really two groups, one German-speaking and one Spanish-speaking, and it is difficult to bring them together. In Brazil, that isn't the case. There just doesn't exist that division. They're all in one church. But in Colombia, they are divided. They're not divided in doctrine. They certainly serve the same Lord. They don't use the same language, but they live in the same country. They have the same culture. Now, you'd say, well, some of the Germans are real, real Germans. That is to say, they're German citizens, and they want someday to go back to Germany, so they need a place to worship. Well, that might be true. But the fact still remains that the Lutheran Church is struggling today to become truly Latin American. And in some places, it has achieved more integration than in others. Let me just point out to you where there are some other stronger Lutheran churches and even seminaries as kind of our introduction, historical introduction. In Argentina, there are several Lutheran churches, one of which is associated with LCA, called the United Evangelical Lutheran Church in Argentina, and they participate in an ecumenical seminary in Buenos Aires. They have about 5,000 adult members, and they claim to be a growing church. They have also elements with European background, but not as many as other churches, and they have achieved some integration. There is also a church related to the LCMS and another church which is a union church from Germany with both Lutheran and Reformed congregations. That's Argentina. In Chile, in Venezuela, in Central America, in the countries of El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, there are small congregations. And in Bolivia, among the Aymara Indians. This is a church that grew out of mission work done by the World Mission Prayer League. The World Mission Prayer League is no longer officially associated with that church. The church at one point said, well, your missionaries are welcome to stay here, but they will now work under our direction. So the church in Bolivia, without really asking too much from the head office in Minneapolis informed them that from now on anybody who wanted to work among the Lutheran, in the Lutheran groups in Bolivia would have to work under their direction. There are seminaries in Brazil, two of them, one associated with the Missouri Synod in Porto Alegre, and the other, the fast-growing, large, 200, over 200 student seminary of the IECLB, as we call the church there in São Leopoldo. The seminary in Mexico City closed. There is a need for some theological education. We don't know what shape it will yet take. So that's just kind of a overview. If you have some specific questions about any given country, I'd be happy to answer them at this point. Yes? The Lutheran Church in Guyana, I forgot about it. Well, I guess I didn't intend to cover them all. I know very little about that church. The LCA is related to that church. It is not a Spanish-speaking or a Portuguese-speaking church, but an English-speaking church. It's also very small. And there are some LCA missionary pastors working there, although very, maybe only one or two. Yes? The Wisconsin Synod, do they have missionaries in Latin America? They have very, very few. I know of a congregation in Medellin in Colombia that is associated with the Wisconsin Synod. And I know of a congregation in Mexico. And I believe that's all. And the Association of Free Lutheran Congregations in the United States also has some work in Brazil. Yes, another question. I believe so. In some parts of the world, you know, there are English-speaking Lutheran congregations for expatriates, for foreigners who happen to be living there, like in Oslo and Copenhagen and Frankfurt and so forth. But in Latin America, there aren't enough Lutherans from the United States speaking English who need their own congregation. So I believe it would be true that the only English-speaking congregations, Lutheran congregations in Latin America, are those of Guyana. I don't know enough about the statistics of that church to be able to answer your question. Another question. Yes? Headquarters in Georgetown, a large number of congregations up the river. Okay. Missionaries from India came because of the settlement of Indians, and that's why it's English-speaking. I think it's English-speaking church because it's an English-speaking country. Am I right? And there's also a French-speaking country, and then the Dutch-speaking, which has the name Suriname, if I'm not mistaken. We could look on my map here and see just what those three colonies were. Yes. Venezuela has a number of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionaries and also some congregations which are independent and which are associated with the Lutheran World Federation but are not related directly to any other foreign church. These congregations are sprinkled throughout Latin America. There are about 12 of them. They're called recognized by the Lutheran World Federation. That is to say, they're independent. They don't belong to a national church. But they are Lutheran. They get some assistance through the Lutheran World Federation from other Lutherans in the world. And I believe there's one of those in Costa Rica. I don't think there's one in Nicaragua. And I would say that the Lutheran witness in Nicaragua is restricted to probably less than 200 people. I'm sure there's not more than two congregations. Churches in Nicaragua. Are there churches, Protestant, evangelical, Catholic churches? How do you mean? Yes, yes, yes. Nicaragua has churches, I'm sure, sprinkled all over the country. Yeah. Like, just in that sense, very much like the rest of Latin America. Yes? In Peru, there are a number of congregations that worship, that have a worshiping community in the German language and also a worshiping community in the Spanish language, but they're really not members from the what we would call the people of Peru. They are usually the expatriates and foreigners, either who are there recently who have been there for a long time. In Ecuador, the same is true, but there is also a missionary effort of the World Mission Prayer League in Ecuador. And they
they are working together with the Norwegian Lutheran Mission from Oslo. They're working up in the mountains in Ecuador. Okay. In 1980, I was able to attend a Congress of Latin American Lutherans. This was the sixth Congress to be held, and it was held in Bogota, Colombia, in August of last year. The sixth Congress means, of course, there were five preceding Congresses. The first started in 1951, and every few years after that, until the sixth Congress in 1980. This was an attempt to kind of break down the isolated conditions under which the Lutherans in Latin America exist from day to day. It's a big continent. The physical barriers are enormous, with the Andes Mountains and the political boundaries, the national customs and everything which separates one country from the other. It isn't like the United States. You can drive across here and you don't have to talk to a customs or an immigration official from one end of the country to the other. That's not true in Latin America. So it breaks up the communication. To say nothing of the inability of most of the people of Latin America to travel in the first place. And so each of these Lutheran churches live kind of a little bit by itself, a little bit isolated from one from the other. And so these congresses were established with the help of the Lutheran World Federation and the former National Lutheran Council here in our own country at the very beginning to offer some point of contact and some exchange among them. And this Congress in Bogota was very interesting because they kind of took charge of the Congress, that is, the Latin Americans themselves. In previous Congresses that was organized by LWF and paid for by the LWF, and at this time, the Latin Americans said, no, we don't want too many observers. And so they were selective. And not everybody could go who wanted to go. And the proceedings of the Congress were held in the languages which they have as their own, in either Spanish or Portuguese. And when a Brazilian gives a lecture in Portuguese, it's not translated into Spanish, and vice versa. When somebody gets up and reacts in Spanish, those who speak Portuguese are expected to follow along. Now, it takes a little bit training the ear, even for a Brazilian to understand Spanish, especially if it's spoken very rapidly, but it's possible. There was also a representative from Guyana, a woman delegate, and of course she didn't speak either Portuguese or Spanish, so there had to be some translation for her. And there were also some observers from the Lutheran World Federation who didn't speak either of the languages. So there were five or six people who huddled around an interpreter in the back of the room. About 47 voting delegates and maybe an equal number of observers and staff and one thing or another. So this was the Congress. It met under the theme, Our Faith and Our Mission in Latin America. And this was a theme which was broken down into sub-themes, and they talked about the content of the gospel, the context of our message, and the consequences of our message. And interestingly enough, those who presented the major papers or the major lectures on these three sub-themes were not learned, trained theologians, but they chose parish pastors and laypersons to contribute then the heart of the Congress. And all Lutheran groups in Latin America were invited, not only those who had some relationship or who were members of the Lutheran World Federation. So we had, as an example, the richness of Latin America Lutheranism, large churches, small churches, immigrant churches, LWF member churches, one union church. A union church is in the model of the German union church, has Reformed congregations and Lutheran congregations, but they are under one church. Churches in close relationship with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod were in attendance. churches with varying dependence on subsidy or personnel from sister churches. Some that are heavily dependent, others that are not at all dependent on these churches in Europe and in North America. In spite of this ecclesiastical diversity and some apparent theological differences, a strong commitment to Lutheran identity in unity was evident. They realized that since they are small in number, they want to stick together. They explored their themes with a lot of realism, a lot of courage, of course, they faced these great many problems that face Latin America society, and they tackled those and dug into them, but of course didn't come up with some easy solution, because there are no apparent easy solutions to these great problems in Latin America. There was a visitor who came from another Protestant church in Colombia who gave a resounding call for involvement in the political struggle and take up the arms and fight the revolution. And it was interesting to note that although this presentation was politely listened to, it was not overwhelmingly endorsed. Very few of those in attendance thought that this was the option that Lutherans should go in Latin America. On the other hand, there was extreme interest in liberation theology and how, in a nonviolent way, the Lutherans need to discover their commitment to the poor. And the option for the poor, as it's called by the Roman Catholics, as became in the Roman Catholic Bishops' Conference in Puebla, Mexico, kind of the theme for this decade, was considered also and underlined, endorsed, perhaps not as strongly as some would have liked. And so, in conclusion, there was a growing recognition and a willingness by Lutherans to become an essential part of Latin American society and to become engaged in God's mission in their continent. And the call to preach and witness to the whole gospel in the Latin American context, with all its difficult but necessary consequences for the churches, was understood by this Sixth Congress to be an authentic and a welcome task. Human rights, justice, and the growing gap between the dominating rich and the dominated poor were accepted as legitimate concerns, alongside and bound to the condemnation of sin, repentance, discipleship, and faithfulness to Jesus Christ. A desire to have greater contact and increasing opportunities for dialogue and theological reflection was stressed. Lutherans in Latin America want to meet more regularly and more intensively than before, and they set out in their series of recommendations certain steps to accomplish this. Well, that was just an introduction to how, in a continent-wide basis, the Lutherans are in touch with one another, and they share these great problems of Latin American society, and they seek to understand them. And even though there are some theological differences, some more conservative, some more liberal, some opposed to any relationship of Christian faith to the political realm, and others insisting that this is a part of the gospel. Nonetheless, they found much in common, and I believe that this kind of contact there will continue. Any questions at this point? Yes, sir. Your question is how are the congregations structured and what kind of work do they do at the congregational level? Yes. Let me say, I think I could pick up and say yes. The congregational work in Brazil, for instance, which is then of the largest church, maybe the most similar to ours, can really be best imagined if you think about your own congregation here, you know? A worshiping community coming together as often as is possible. That doesn't mean every week, every Sunday in Brazil, because it's just not possible to have Sunday morning services in all of the congregations in Brazil because there aren't enough pastors to go around. But whenever possible, the worshiping community,
women's groups meeting sometimes once a week, sometimes once a month. Confirmation classes over a two-year period on a weekly basis, instruction by the pastor or other lay persons who are trained for that job. Young people's work, organized youth groups in some congregations, and then some regional and some national structures where they have retreat centers and the like. I don't want to give the impression that, you know, it's no different than here, because it is different. But the, I think you can only understand the difference after you also understand the similarity. And the basic similarity is that the parish structure that we have here, the parish structure in Europe, and the parish structure of this Brazilian Lutheran Church are very similar. The National Church in Brazil recently established five priorities for itself for this first years of this decade. I'd just like to point out to you what they are, and I think you'll learn then from the Evangelical Church of the Lutheran Confession in Brazil what are their priorities and what are they struggling with in their country and in their reality. The first priority they gave was evangelization. They want to be bearers of the gospel to Brazil. They consider themselves Brazilian, and they feel that they are called to witness to Christ in that country and in that context, and they want to grow, and they want to reach out. And they have not just established this on paper, but they indeed are putting personnel and some of their funds, and some funds also channeled from sister churches around the world, into new areas of outreach. Now, they don't understand evangelization in Brazil in a narrow way. They understand a witness of the whole gospel to the whole person. And so in the new areas of the Amazon, as I mentioned Tuesday night, when they send their pastors and their evangelists into that area, they go as a team. And they'll have a nurse along, or an agriculturalist, or a teacher, or all three. And they'll establish work in a given community. And the building up of the congregation and the gathering of the faithful in worshiping community is very much a part of this, but it's only part of it, and the rest of it continues in the community. And they see that their task of evangelization is not only a task to get new members for our church, but to be a witness to the gospel in the whole community, and to work together with other Christians in this task of evangelization. These teams, for instance, I had an opportunity to visit them. I'd just like to share with you. We went out into the interior of Rondônia, which is a territory, not a state in Brazil. It has not yet achieved statehood. It's still a territory, like the old Dakota Territory or when Alaska was a territory but not a state. We went out into the interior there. It took us about 2.5 hours to get there by jeep. We were going right through the jungle. Barely a road, but the farmers lived out on these outlying areas, and about 30 or 40 of them came together. We pretty much spent the whole day together. We came there shortly before noon, and we left about 9 o'clock at night. And this is the way the ministry goes on there. It's kind of a, you know, when the pastor and his team come, you know, you stay for a while. You don't just run in and run out. And in addition to having a Bible study and singing songs, whether they're liberation songs or spiritual choruses, religious choruses and the like, then a discussion about whether or not a veterinary post should be established out in that outlying area, because by the time a farmer discovered that one of his pigs was sick and walked the 17 miles into town and got some medicine for his sick pig and came back, the pig was dead. So they had to work out a way where the veterinary post would be closer to them. And the church was helping them to establish that, was going to provide the initial stock for the veterinary cabinet, and was going to be under the supervision of one of the farmers. And one of the members of the team then from the Lutheran church was going to be the coordinator and give them their assistance. He had training in veterinary science. He was not a veterinarian, but he had that experience. And then a discussion about sanitation and nutrition. and just general encouragement. For these farmers are out there in the middle of the jungle. You know, the jungle grows back so fast. If you go out there without a chainsaw, and many of them do not have the chainsaw, you can only keep about 7 acres clean, one person, with an axe, because it grows back so fast. You know, even if it's cleared, you know, you just need to spend all your time keeping that 7 acres. No, it's 14 acres, I'm sorry. 14 acres is about the most that one person can keep cleared. And the living conditions are very primitive. Well, these people need encouragement, and they need to know that they're not alone, and that they, when they need help, they can get it. And so when they go into town, where do they go? They go to the Lutheran Center, which is not only a church. There is a little chapel there, but it's an overnight, what would you call it? Pension, a hostel. Because if you live 17 miles out and you have to walk that distance, if you come into town one day, you're not going to be able to go back on the same day, so you have to stay over. Well, they were in need of a place where a safe place, inexpensive. And so the Lutheran Church then said, well, we've got this hostel here. And so they have to help keep it clean, one thing or another. These are just examples of the way this evangelism team understands its task. The other priority for the Brazilian church was the legal rights of the Indians of Brazil. The Indians in Brazil, especially in the Amazon region, are suffering from the encroachment of mining companies and settlers and farmers. The government is encouraging to come up there. And they can't keep the land that they have traditionally used for their own purposes, and also in their education, one thing or another. In Brazil, the Indians are wards of the state. They have not been given a full citizen status, and that is the case why one Indian leader who was invited to go to the Netherlands for an international conference, he was not given a passport. And the reason he wasn't given a passport, alleged the Brazilian government, was that as a ward of the state, you know, the state was the one who should decide whether he should go or not. It wasn't a matter of a citizen saying, I want to travel abroad, because he had enough. He had an invitation, he had his way paid. In the end, the Brazilian government had to relent and gave in, but he did arrive late for his conference. Another priority, agrarian reform. We talked about the fact that in Brazil there's a good law for agrarian reform on the books, but in practice it hasn't been carried out, and many large land holdings with sharecroppers living on the land but without any really rights to stay there, without any possibility of being their own bosses, so to speak, exist. And so agrarian reform has been selected by the church as an area where the church needs to speak and needs to nudge the government so that this reform might be implemented. Another priority, proportional contribution at the congregational level. I suppose you could call that stewardship. They need to strengthen at the congregational level and at the national level the support for their own church from their people. I suppose that's an ongoing concern even in our country, but in Brazil it's particularly so, because they still are dependent on about a little over 25% of their national budget still comes from some assistance from the outside, and they want to reduce that. They don't want to be dependent. They'd like to be able to work in partnership with other churches of the world, but not be dependent. And the last of the five, and I don't think they have them in any specific order, and I certainly have not given them in the order that they gave them, unity in the midst of theological diversity. That is to say, a lot of theological currents and movements among the Lutherans in Brazil, and yet this church, the Evangelical Church of the Lutheran Confession one in Brazil, wants to show that we can still be one church, and wants to find what is the common ground that binds us together in our Christian faith and in our Lutheran understanding of the faith. And so those are the five areas that were chosen then by the church council, and where the Brazilians are striving to bear their witness in their in their reality. Excuse me, I didn't hear your question. The Roman Catholic Church, I'm sure, as you asked, would be very much in favor and identify very closely with these priorities. I don't know if it's true that they have the same priorities. Yes, especially in these questions of which relate to the social arena, the Roman Catholic Church is also quite progressive and is certainly in the agrarian reform and the defense of the rights of the Indians is very active. There is a Brazilian pastor who was a missionary to some of the Indian tribes up in the territory in the state of Acre, which is on the western boundary of Brazil in the Amazon next to Peru. And he works with the Roman Catholics. The Lutherans don't have a separate organization up there. He's just been loaned, as it were, to this Roman Catholic diocese to work among the Indians. And in that sense, there is some real good cooperation. Another question here. Yeah, your question is then, as I referred to Brazil, the exchange of observers between the Protestants and the Catholics, was that also the case in the 6th Latin America Lutheran Congress? The answer is yes. There were Roman Catholic observers and Protestant observers at this Congress, and they were very interested in what was going on. The Roman Catholic observer, who represented not just the Catholics in Colombia, where the Congress was held, but CELAM, which is the Latin America Council of Roman Catholic Bishops, was given voice and vote at this Congress. He couldn't believe it. He not only had the right to speak, but when they said everybody raised their hand, he was allowed to raise his hand. We from the North America and Europe, we of course had a right, some of us had the right to speak, but we certainly couldn't vote. But he was given the right to vote, and it really impressed him. And there was also a Protestant observer representing the Latin America Council of Churches in Formation. This is, yes, the same. The distinction seemed to be whether you were Latin American or not, not whether you were Lutheran or not. Yeah. Another question, sir. Is there political harassment of the Lutheran Church? With some of their stands on social issues, some Lutherans in Latin America have earned the attention of the governments in their countries. I would not call it harassment yet, but they have been, the governments have taken notice that there is a fresh wind, a little bit of a new image of Lutheran activity in the social and political area, and I would maybe even disfavor from the government, but harassment I don't believe. Now, I mentioned how the Lutherans in Central America face the risk of death because of the preaching of the gospel. That's really, in some sense, you could say, from the government, because in some cases in Central America, the government is behind this wanton killing, no question about it. But in the South America as such, I don't know. I know that in some local areas there has been harassment. I would guess that the lay persons and pastors who speak up for the rights of the Indians, for instance, out in some of these areas in Brazil, they've been called on the carpet. But I don't know of anybody having been imprisoned or tortured, at least in Brazil or not. In Chile, the situation is a little bleak in that anybody, whether you belong to the church or not, who speaks up against the government is subject to harassment. The government in Chile is very strict about that, and so whatever is done has to be done a little bit in secret. And the government in Chile accepts the church only insofar as it stays out of politics. And it interprets that in a very broad way. It allows them to meet for worship, but it certainly would not like to see the church being involved in any kind of committee work for political refugees or some such thing, as is the case, as is needed, because there are many political refugees in Latin America who are either have been expelled, who were in prison and then perhaps expelled because of international pressure. Some are still in prison, in Chile in any case, and in Argentina with the many disappeared people from the last decade. And the church that speaks up and says that's wrong is risking its favored status. And many people in Latin America are saying, well, if that's what we're going to lose, that's what we'll have to lose. And so they are, in effect, taking a stand where they believe a stand should be taken. Yes, the Lutherans, as I said, seem to work quite well with the Methodists and Episcopal Presbyterians, and in some cases with other groups as well. The Lutherans are one of the smaller Protestant bodies in Latin America. The Pentecostalists are the greatest in number, the Pentecostalists, and they are a variety of denominations. And the Presbyterian and Methodist Church are also somewhat strong in Latin America. I don't know the figures. If Latin America has a population of 350 million and maybe 5% are Protestants, then that would mean somewhat over 15 million, maybe 20 million Protestants in Latin America. That's probably low. It might even be higher than that, because maybe it's even up to 8%. Seem to come about every 5 or 8 years, somewhere in between. There isn't any fixed number of years that it takes place. That's what it is, the Latin American Lutheran Congress, and there have been 6. Well, I see we are approaching the end of the hour. There, one more question. Panama. I know very little about Panama, except I know there are 2 North American Lutheran pastors who are working there. They were once missionaries of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and when the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod went through its struggles here in this country during the last 2 years, they left the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They still have some work in Panama, but it is a little bit independent. And they were delegates to the Congress in Bogota, but they have not really formed a church. And I don't know if they would number more than maybe 100. Now, I understand that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will be establishing a mission effort in Panama, but that is something very recent, and I don't believe it has yet begun. Some of the work there in Panama was in the canal zone, and now I guess the idea would be to not begin work in the canal zone, but rather in Panama itself. I know there are many English-speaking community churches in Latin America that serve North Americans. I suppose that in Panama City, you certainly would find, in the canal zone, you'd certainly find one of those, but not necessarily a Lutheran English-speaking church. Thank you very much.